There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Slay in Your Lane, the podcast. My name's Yomi Adeleke.
I'm Elizabeth Ifebenene.
So Elizabeth, how has your week been so far?
Really busy. I think from feeling like a sim, which I think a lot of people found hilarious. Thanks guys. Last week or the last time we spoke properly, guys, to just feeling like, honestly, just yeah, total burnout. It just feels as if like the world has opened up, but all the work that was meant to get done in the 4 months we went, that obviously COVID was, we were on lockdown, has to get done in like a week, which is always not useful. How about you?
Yeah, man, I'm not gonna lie, it's not been the easiest of weeks. It's just been a bit crazy. There's been a lot to do and literally no time to do it. But you know, we move. So we're gonna go straight into our first topic, which is basically based on an article that I think was from The Atlantic, called Why Success Won't Make You Happy. And it's about success addicts. Obviously people can be addicted to anything. And it was talking about the idea that people basically, probably more as well in the social media climate that we blame for everything, but that's because it's true. People feeling more and more pressured to be successful. And this article is essentially outlining why continued wins and successes still won't necessarily make you happy in the long term. It's a very short term rush of serotonin and dopamine. And I found that really interesting. So I know quite a few success addicts. Where would you say you fall on the spectrum, Elizabeth, in terms of like, are you somebody that feels that you can get happiness from success, or are you someone that's like, nah, there's bigger fish to fry and bigger meaning to life?
I think that it's that thing of like, you always find with in like capitalist societies were very kind of, you know, productivity driven societies, you can see the difference between, you know, like the West and the West's approach to happiness to, you know, other places. And I think there was, you know, when it's like this place is voted the most, you know, happiest place to live and people are generally happier, yet poverty is XYZ. And there's always that, those types of articles and research that's done that comes over the years. And I think that's definitely how I feel about like happiness and success and all of that sort of stuff around being happy. Because I feel like if you're not happy with, you know, one thing, you're probably never going to be a happy person or see success or achievement as something that you have to keep. Like, it's definitely addictive. But I think that if you're, you know, if it's like a never ending pursuit of, you know, X goal, you're never going to be satisfied. It's like an itch you can't like scratch and you can't essentially be fulfilled by. I think that's just my kind of like view on these things. I feel like if you're never going to be happy, you know, with just your lot now, once you get, you know, times 10 of your lot, you're probably not going to be happy. So that's definitely how I view these types of like those types of feelings. How about you?
I was going to ask before we even get to me, like, how would you say it fits into your personal life? Like, do you feel like you're somebody that chases the high of success, or do you feel like you're just kind of like whatever, or do you feel like there's a pressure to?
I think for me, it's just not success for success sake. So it's like, because I don't know, I feel like everyone's got their own, or everyone should have their own kind of like version of what success looks like for them. So I think for me, I think when I was younger, I think if my younger, if, so let's say I'm 28 now, when I was 18 and I was thinking about, you know, well, I was going to university and I thought about my life now, like 18-year-old me would be like, oh my God, you're so successful, like super, like this is exactly what you wanted. But I think it wasn't, my success at that age was based on independence, financial independence, life. It was life independence. And I think that was way, that was what my success metric was kind of like, or not my, yeah, that was what it was measured by. It wasn't about, I didn't think about work-life balance and anything like that. I think for me, the pressure came down to financial security and financial independence. So not, you know, and I think that freedom that it's given me now and the option to not do things or do things, I think that's definitely for me what, if I was looking at success back then, that's exactly what, I was looking at success back then, and that's exactly what I wanted. So I have that now. So in all sense and purposes, I am, you know, successful in that respect. So for me, it's never success to boast about it or success to, it's that security because I'm a Taurus and I believe like that's something that I crave a lot. So I guess now, I don't know, I don't know. I think it's more impact as opposed to financial independence. I think that's, financial independence will always be something that runs through my whole life because it's that whole immigrant mentality. Oh my God, you've got to keep going. But then I would definitely say now it's probably more around, less so around that, even though that's still the thread, but more so around impact. So yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but.
It does, yeah, no. I don't know, I find the article interesting because I feel like I see a lot of people I know in it in terms of like, once they achieve something, like being like, okay, what's the next thing kind of thing, and not necessarily like giving themselves credit in the moment. Like I was talking about this to Pam as always, like a couple of days ago, actually, just in terms of I sent the article to my sister, I sent the article to Pam, I sent it to people that I felt like, oh, like I see you in this where you've actually achieved a great deal, but don't necessarily in the moment allow yourself to sit in that moment and be like, wow, like it's taken me, like it, I don't know, it could be like it's taking me 4 years to get to this point of this one particular milestone, and you within 4 minutes the feeling of like self-congratulation is like gone. And it was interesting because everyone was kind of like, yeah, like I actually am like that, but I guess everyone has their reasons. Like for you, it's like you're talking about success being a prioritized because of like a need of like stability and stuff. And I was talking to my sister Brian, and she was saying that, you know, she's just a very self-critical person and like it doesn't necessarily like give herself like enough credit. And Pam was saying that, like, you know, hello again Pam, she was saying that, like, you know, when it comes to her career, it's like or just her general self, it's very much about like what's the next thing, because she thinks about time a lot and feeling short of time. And I think that's like a general theme for a lot of people now, because it feels like, you know, I don't know, 30, when you're approaching 30 anyway, it's like this weird invisible milestone that like we all have to like kind of spontaneously achieve everything we've ever wanted to achieve because of things like 30 under 30 lists and like youth, like those kind of portfolios of like, here are the ones to watch, the idea of like rising stars and stuff only being up to like a particular point. So yeah, I guess like I was saying this recently on another podcast that like I think I'm actually quite self-congratulatory, to be honest. Like I feel like being successful in my career is not what I define as success overall. I feel like being successful in my career is something that I find necessary because of financial independence. Like, it's interesting, we're going to be talking about the bank of mum and dad, like, in a few minutes, because, like, it's not something that I've ever had access to. So I've always been very financially independent, but I don't see that as successful per se. But, like, if I hit a milestone that I want to hit, I will bask in that for like weeks, months, years. Like in my brain, I'm only 28 and I'm like, oh, I'm doing stuff that I hoped I'd be doing by the time I was like mid 30s. So I'm always saying that if I took a year out and like just fell off for a couple of years, I'd probably feel okay because I feel like I'm ahead of where I wanted to be anyway. But I think it's very easy that even if you do feel ahead of where you wanted to be, to kind of still feel like it's not enough. But I think, I don't know, I've always been somebody that's kind of like, like, I don't know, when people talk about treating yourself as you would your like little self, like treating yourself like you would as your inner child or whatever. And I feel like I do that all the time. Like I'm very like, what's the word? Maybe sometimes too easy on myself, that I'm like, oh, you don't have to particularly be productive. We're in the middle of a pandemic, which is true. But yeah, I try to treat myself with the kindness that I treat others in terms of like, you know, being like, it's not every day that you must come and die. So yeah, I didn't necessarily, and I think as well, for me, success encompasses things like healthy relationships and general happiness. So I feel like, if in all honesty, like not trying to sound like a hippie, like being zen and feeling like good about myself and feeling good about like my loved ones and stuff is a form of success that often is sidelined when we're focusing on career success. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel like maybe that's why I don't define it as much as like my, like I've always said, if I tapped out and got pregnant and got married tomorrow and had no career, it's not the thing to be saying. But like, I honestly say, like, if that was the case, I wouldn't feel like, oh no, who am I? I've fallen off. I'd be like, oh, well, this is another version of success because I want a family. So yeah, like that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, I think people need to see it as more of a kind of like holistic thing as opposed to just like productivity and being and career focused for sure. And like relationships, and people have to see it as like 360, but I don't think we see it as enough in that. And I think you can, I think that's the thing. I've always said, if I got everything I wanted tomorrow, if I'm not happy with what I have now, it's impossible to be happy with, you know, if you write five things you've always wanted. So I think that you're either going to be happy with your lot now, or you're just never going to be happy. And I think that's, even if it's like relationships, if it's whatever, like you have to find happiness in yourself, and you can't do that with any of like anything else. I don't know if how you feel about that, Yobi, but I think definitely a sense of like, these things just distract us. I think success, all these milestones, all this like marriage, I think all they just distract us from really tuning in and going what makes me happy? Like, am I happy? If you took everything away from you and you dumped yourself in the middle of like the desert, like what is left? Like, if you're not happy, then you're never going to be happy. I know that's quite depressing, but I think that's a reality. Like, I think a lot of people kind of, yeah, myself included, which is something like, I think it was a realization I probably had a few years ago when I was achieving very visible forms of like success. It doesn't take away real, you know, real inherent challenges in your life that if you don't kind of like confront, you know, you can be the most successful visibly or have, you know, a great family and all of these things. But ultimately, like, you know, there's a reason why people who have very little end up being, you know, one of the most happiest types of people.
In that article, they spoke about like, I think maybe part of the reason, again, like I'm not massively like, people don't believe me when I say I'm like, I'm not really particularly a hugely ambitious person. Like, I am ambitious, but it's not, I don't think anyone at school or even uni or even college would have been like, oh, you're so ambitious, because I'm just not. But like, I just think I found what worked for me and very much lent into it. But I think like, another reason I'm probably not like that is because like, I really, really thrive in terms of, or try to thrive and really prioritize human relationships. I'm like big on like friends and family. But I was like, in this piece, what really struck me was like how much people like will like sacrifice like links with their family, their friends, their loved ones, in the pursuit of success. So like, it was talking about the idea of being like married to their work and stuff like that, and being like, oh, like, and that, and it's not just romantic, like, you know, being like, oh, a good relationship, whether that be friends or family or whatever, like they'd be like, oh, it's almost more satisfying to have like a good job than good relationship. And this piece was kind of arguing for like the opposite. Do you feel like there've been times where you've sacrificed like relationships in pursuit of work, and like I guess the opposite side of that is like, at the same time, we're taught to really put like, especially romantic relationships, we're really taught to kind of like prioritize them. So how do we like work out the point of like when it's okay to be focused on your work at expense of like, I don't know, finding like a partner or having kids or you know, meeting your friends for dinner?
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, because I'm not a good person to ask, as you probably know, Yomi, because I can't say that I'm somebody who, I think I'm weirdly like a loner at heart, but a sociable person as well. I'm a bit of a contradiction. So I feel like I have periods where I can go very into myself, but, and I think that it then, I don't know. But so I can't say I'm someone who's gone through life like prioritizing friends. I'm probably the opposite, but not like sometimes I remember when I was younger and, or like in secondary school, and I wanted to kind of like, you know, not do well. Like, I was very much like, I got a bit like ambitious. So I was just like, yeah, you guys don't get me. Like, I was just that annoying, like 16-year-old or 15-year-old. So I was very like counter my friends, and I was just like, yeah. And I just kind of went off and did my own thing, and I kind of reveled in that. But I wouldn't, so I wouldn't say, but then also like to uni, I became way more social. And like, not because I was, it was out of my character, but it was just natural. So I don't know. I can't say I go through life being like, I don't know. I think it's also how you're brought up. I think a lot of it is that it stems from that. So for me, I didn't necessarily have a lot of strong like family members and things like that, but I'm the only one of my mum and my dad. So I have an only child mentality, and I have a and that can kind of come out in a way that, you know, like you don't need anybody else but yourself. Like, and I wouldn't say that comes out now, but I think it's very much, I don't even know what I'm saying, but I think that I can't say that, you know, throughout, like, I had like really strong relationships with loads of people. Like, I know obviously you have your sisters, and you guys always been close, and you've had that throughout your life and stuff. I can't say I have that. So I don't think my natural disposition is therefore investing relationships, not because I don't
want to, but because
I don't have it.
You're not sacrificing, it's just how you are.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't think I have.
No, it does.
I'm making
it does
sense,
make
but I don't know. How about you? Because I feel like growing up with like sisters who you're very close to, you probably feel the loss more.
Yeah, definitely.
If you didn't, because obviously when you know things are very busy and stuff, I remember you'd be like, oh, I'm not spending as much time with my sister. Da, 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 da. And so
yeah,
I think it's
definitely.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Like, I really hate that. Like, I'm very flaky as a person. Like, generally, as I was saying before, like, I'm not amazing at like keeping in touch or like being consistent. But it's something that genuinely bothers me, because like before, like, I would see like my sisters, my like closest friends and stuff all the time, and like I still speak to everyone all the time. But it's just like I was just a lot more cross it. But it's really hard, and it's something I'm trying. I really do try to prioritize, because it's like. I genuinely find more joy in it than like work. Like I love what I do, and I genuinely feel very, very lucky to be able to do like something I like as a career and stuff. But like I definitely like I would say as I've made more sim talk, but yeah, I definitely am like a relationship based sim. Like I love my friends, I love my family. So I'm like, it does start to feel like a sacrifice when I've like got to do work, and it's like I can't spend as much time with people I care about. But I really do try to like block out time, like and be like, okay, you know, how do I like multitask? Like, how do I kind of like, it sounds whatever, but like trying to like kill two birds with one stone and be like, okay, I'm going to this, you know, after work event that's just going to be like with free like booze and like hors d'oeuvres. Do you want to come with me? And we'll kind of like, you know, I'll turn like work events into like dates and be like, okay, sis, we're gonna like go and like eat loads of free food and drink loads of drinks, and I might have to like do a bit of networking and stuff, but like it's still gonna be like this is how I'm trying to like make it so that I'm still doing stuff I have to do for my work, but then also being able to see people I care about. I do
that
a lot.
Approach.
Like, yeah, I think so. I think it makes me feel like less like a flop, because I'm like, okay, I can still attend what I need to attend, but I really do feel like what you're saying about if you're dropped in the desert, like who are you kind of thing. Like I feel like, yeah, I'm pretty much everybody that I care about. Like those are really my most important things. And as much as I like stuff and like I like you know, yeah, going up a career ladder, I do think that just because of how like I guess my Instagram looks, like I feel like if honestly I was asked like, would you prefer to like undo all your career achievements of the past few years, or basically like lose like your entire inner circle of friends? Like I can honestly say without hesitation, I'd be like, oh, let's just undo the work, because like...
Do you think people would choose the opposite?
I think some people,
according
yeah, for
to
sure.
this article.
Yeah, I that's why the article was so interesting. Like, funny enough, the people I sent it to definitely really prioritize relationships as well. I think with them, it's just more of a case of like, they're hard on themselves. I feel like they don't get to revel in it and really celebrate what it is they're doing, because it's still, there's more to like achieve, rather than it being like, okay, like I've actually done this thing, let me give myself like a break for a minute. But I feel like a lot of people definitely, like I've watched people definitely like sideline like friendships and romantic relationships because of work, and be like, I've watched relationships definitely break down because of like work. So I feel like I do think some people would be like, I can, not even necessarily I can make new friends, but like,
yeah, I think
you know,
people
yeah.
would definitely think I can make new friends,
yeah,
especially in the industry we're in.
Absolutely, for sure. I feel like, yeah, exactly. I think that's the thing. You see it where it's like the industry we're in, like, I always find it so interesting how like so many people, the majority of their friends are, I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, but like so many journalists I know are friends of other journalists, so many writers I know are friends of other writers. And it's like, I'm not against that at all, because like it's great to have people that are in the same profession so you can all bitch about the same things. But like, I mean, you know, like most of my friends are just like my friends from like my childhood and like my, you know, if not secondary school, then college, which is generally like, you know, from my actual life. Because the fact that I even call it my actual life is because I genuinely don't see like journalism and writing and the industry as the be all and end all. If you were faced with that choice and it was like, and I guess again, because you're quite like, as you said, to yourself anyway, as a person, it's not even just, okay, we're going to take away all your success from like the past few years versus taking away like your closer friends. I guess like if it was something like, okay, we're going to take away all that success, but we're also going to make sure that like, I don't know, you, not only do we take away your closest friends, but we make it so that you have to be like completely like almost isolated by yourself and just have all the jewels. I'm sure there's like a Bible parable about this or something, but like all the jewels in the world, all the money in the world, but you have to basically enjoy it alone. What would your kind of, you know, take on that be?
What do you think my take on would be? Because I think, I don't think I'm attached to stuff because...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I'm attached to stuff. I'm a Taurus. But I don't care about a lot.
Like I was going to say, that's the thing. It's, you say what you got to say and then I'll tell you what I think.
Yeah, I don't care about a lot. I think because... I'm so aware of like mortality, and I don't mean that in some morbid way, but I think I'm just like, life is life and we just go through it, and you make everything that we do in between now and when God wants us is essentially like memories. Like, I'm so happy we don't, I know it sounds so morbid to say, but I think for me, I'm attached to stuff, and if someone was like, oh, take it all away, I'll just want to just get by. I think ultimately I want to make sure that I'm okay to like financially. But apart from that, I don't feel like I'm one of those types of people. And I think with the article, I probably couldn't be able to relate. I'll probably get a rush to achieve said goal. Absolutely. I like achieving shared goals. That's why working on myself to do stuff. I like working as a team or like one other person. I love that rush. So I find it hard to get excited of individual achievements as much as I do get excited of collective achievement. I feel like that for me, I love the rush. But so once I achieve that, it's kind of like, okay, what's next? But it's not what's next in terms of like, I have to then be successful, whatever, because it's very much like, I think you probably get to a point in life where you're just like, it is what it is. But I think it's more so like, that rush is what I crave. So I crave the rush less so the success that comes, I feel like that's probably what I loved the most about Slaying Lane in the early days. It was that rush. But yeah, to answer your question, I think I would be like, okay, whatever. But it's not because I'd be like, oh my God, relationships. I don't know.
Either way, you're just like, you know, you're not, I was going to say like, it feels like either way, like you're not massively attached to many people, but as much as you're like materialistic, I do also know that I've watched you throw like actual clothes in the bin before. So at the same time, I'm like, I don't think you're the most like, you'd be like, oh, I'm going to love like, you know, that whole, oh, it's better to cry in a Lamborghini alone. I know that's not the quote, but there's that quote or something like that. It's like, I don't think you're really that kind of person either. I think so. It's a difficult one, like with you, to be honest, because yeah, like I could imagine you, it would depend on your mood that day, to be honest.
I'm so incredibly mood driven. It's too much. It's just, yeah, so I think it 100% would be, but I don't know, I feel like with what you're saying around relationships, I feel like what's funny, I feel like people would sacrifice their friendship relationships for romantic relationships because that seems the bigger goal, because I think people see other people.
I hate that. You know how much I hate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think women are definitely like taught to do that and taught to put friendships on a lower, what's the word? Like lower in the pecking order than friendships, which I've never understood, because I'm like, the reality is most relationships don't last. So unless it's your husband, which even then, like, divorce rate's quite high, I'm always like, but the problem is that like when it goes left, which it just will, because not all the time, but 9 times out of 10, especially when you're, like, you're young, it's like, then it's harder to kind of reintegrate and harder to kind of like move forward with friendship groups, because it's like everybody's kind of moved on in that time. And like, it's very much a thing where I think women, it's interesting to see how men never are like programmed to do that. I think as women, because we're taught to define ourselves so heavily through romantic relationships, it's like guys, when they're like, oh shit, like, okay, this went left, it's like their boys are in the exact same place, and it's like they, it's like they didn't have to drop anything. But I think with women, it's a real, I think sometimes even men encourage it sometimes, to be honest. If you're, if you've got, do you know what I mean? Because your girls will be like, he's a bit, not really sure about him. And then they'll, rather than them address themselves and be like, well, maybe she's got a right not to be sure about me, they might, they're usually like, oh, well, maybe you should be wary of her. And they start to like alienate people from their friendship groups. Like,
100%.
Which is annoying.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So our next topic is the bank of mum and dad. So there's now going to be a tighter limit on how much your family can help you when you're getting your deposit together. So when you want to buy a house or for a mortgage, the bank of mum and dad is kind of like often seen as like a way that, you know, if your parents have assets and things like that, they're able to kind of help you. The UK's second largest lender has tightened its rules because of uncertainty in the economy. So now to get a mortgage of a 10% deposit, a buyer must prove that they have saved 75% of that deposit themselves. So usually a lot of parents, like, you know, not a lot of parents, but if your parents can, they would want to help you. But because of just the way COVID and post-pandemic housing situation is going to look like, people, like, yeah, they're tightening up the rules. What are your thoughts on that, Yomi? And what are your thoughts around the bank of mum and dad generally?
Gosh, in terms of the bank of mum and dad, I'm just like, the what? Like, I do not know her at all. Like, I've just never, like, I think, since I was 16, like, I've had a job. Like, I haven't really, like, I mean, obviously everybody to an extent has some experience with the bank of mum and dad, but like, I can honestly say as soon as I was like legal to work, like, it was pretty much like that was shut. So I think it's interesting how the conversations kind of panned out, because I feel like, you know, obviously there's a lot of like upset. And of course, I feel like I've got to even be careful with how I word it, because I don't want to sound like this resentful person that's kind of like, you know, loving the fact that like now we must all suffer together. But I do feel like, you know, it's not something that most people had access to anyway. And I feel like it will affect a population of people, but I'm not going to lie, it's a population of people that I feel, how do I put it? It's quite difficult to victimize, because if your parents have that amount for deposit anyway, you're probably not going to die of starvation anytime soon. I think that's the way I see it, without trying to sound too harsh. Like, I totally understand that it might like be, you know, a bit peak for some people, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, the kind of like narrative that, I mean, I'm trying to stay offline anyway to avoid conversations like this, to be honest, and the politics that comes with it. But I feel like the level of almost like victimization and just like, oh my gosh, like the outrage, I'm like, yeah, but if you even had that as an option, you're probably gonna be okay. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you can't rely on your parents for a house, but you can most certainly rely on them for pretty much to give you money in terms of anything else, which is just something that like I just cannot relate to. I don't really what I think. I think I just think if you had the bank of mom and dad, well, congratulations. Unfortunately, it's kind of, the time has come to an end, but you're probably better off still than a very large sector of the population. How about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think honestly, with this whole bank of mom and dad thing, it's something that I've not been able to, I can't relate. So I've been in situations where I have, like, you know, gone to, I've had colleagues who have basically been, you know, their parents have, you know, helped them buy a house and things like that. And it is, I guess that whole resentment thing is just a bit, it's hard to kind of not resent the situation. I don't hate the player, I hate the game. And I think genuinely that's how I feel about, like, a lot of this stuff, because, like, it is frustrating, because even if you earn a good salary, muscling up a, you know, rustling up a deposit is, like, the biggest challenge. And I remember when I first started out, in, like, when I was a graduate, I very much, like, came to, it dawned on me, like, 10% increase my salary year on year was never going to help me, you know, buy a house, or to save up a large enough deposit working and living in central London. So it is like frustrating that I've always felt frustrated by that, like, that whole bank of mum and dad. But I've met really cool people and really nice people who, you know, it's one of those things, like, it's not their fault, but it's just a system. So I've kind of just been a little bit like, you know what, it is what it is, sort of thing. It's not my reality. And I think as well, I don't know, it's just, it, I think there's also, they were saying that, you know, like, it will make an impact on a lot of young people getting their first home, and things like that. And I think we do want more people to, you know, first time buyers. It's like, who is, you know, when they talk about first time buying, going higher, like, you know, increase, it's like, which group? Because it'll probably be the group that already owns property, which is the parents. Like, it's, so it just, there is that inequality that that banker mum and dad does have, that, and that's why that's what I resent more than anything. And I think unless you're super, super savvy and you have multiple jobs and things like that, and things have gone really your way over the last couple of years, a graduate starting out, it's just, the market isn't fair. So I think as well, with this whole changing of, you know, the way COVID has kind of, like, impact the way we kind of, like, see where we can work. I think maybe people are, like, rethinking things as well. So I think the bubble of London needs to be kind of, like, less, so the pressure to live and work in London is something a lot of young people do feel. So I hopefully it just broadens our horizons a lot, because what you find is people who aren't from a particular area, obviously gentrification, if people who aren't from a particular area, they get to kind of buy the houses. So look at Brixton, like, that's, I know someone who grew up in, like, Hertfordshire, and for some reason they now live in Brixton, and it's kind of like, you don't know, it's just because you can, and it's what it does to people who actually are from those areas, it pushes them out. So I don't know, and I know a lot of those people they're not buying. So I think it's a good thing what's happening to an extent, because I feel like what's happening is those people who aren't able to proved, so we're on the same salary, but because you have your mom and dad that can, you know, give you a cheeky 50k, like, if you're gonna have to prove that you can save that much, and that's come from you, that's only a good thing for me. Like, I may not have the money to save now, but it just means that you're not buying up the house before I can even get my cheeky 25k down, sort of thing.
That's the thing, I agree with that, because I think people are acting like, as posh people always do, like, oh, you know, this is, they're kind of being like, I mean, as you said, in terms of, like, the youth and in terms of, like, younger people being able to sort of, like, get onto the property ladder, like, yeah, it can create, like, a sort of disparity in terms of that. So they're really kind of, like, trying to drive in on that and be like, oh, you know, this is really entrenching inequality. But it's like, it was unequal anyway. Like, it already, the bank of mom and dad entrenched inequality anyway, because it gave certain people an immediate head start. And yeah, like, whilst I understand the frustration, I do think that it's just funny how people will be quite okay with the fact, or, like, you know, complicit with the fact that, like, pretty much the expectation is that you can grow up in a particular area and never be expected to own property in that area. And then when it's suddenly that they're, you know, or actually, you also might not be able to own property in this area because your parents aren't going to be able to lend you money. Suddenly that's when they're engaging with these conversations about how unfair and unequal you know, the housing climate is in the UK, and especially in London, because usually when we're all like, you know, bemoaning the renting situation and, you know, like the gentrification and all these different things, they're perfectly quiet or just, oh, well, you know, like you know, they're more than happy to kind of explain to everybody else why it's not that bad. But now I feel like, well, everybody's in the same toilet now. So, you know, like literally better buckle up, like, and get on with it like everyone else has had to. So, yeah, like definitely understand the frustration. But again, it was a pre-existing unfair system that it's interesting to see how vocal people are becoming about the unfairness now. It's finally affecting them.
I couldn't agree more.
So some people have been like, oh, because London, everyone's being priced out. You know, it's serious when even like people like whose parents can afford to give them 50k deposits are being priced out. Like, they're saying that they think, you know, post-pandemic might be a little bit like less London centric. Like, I think that's a conversation that's been happening over the past few years where you see like big companies moving to like Manchester and Birmingham and like building their like flagship spaces there in a bid to make, you know, England basically bigger than London. As someone who's like, you lived in Birmingham, like, do you think we can see past the like the present situation where it's almost perceived as if you don't see it, if you don't live in London, you don't exist, and all the opportunities are centralized in that one city?
Yeah, I think that's a sad reality of sometimes just like you being from London, you do get attached to it. But I've never been that type of person at all. And I do hope there's a, you know, I think that Brexit would have had, obviously COVID is on the top of the agenda, but because of Brexit, I know like one of my friends who, her and her partner had basically left because his job has been migrated to Paris. So they have a house in London, and they've basically had to kind of like put that up for rent. And then, you know, obviously they're in a privileged situation that, you know, they can afford to do that, but and have a nice life in Paris. But still, that's like a migrating of a job. And I know someone else whose work, and this is a banking jobs, by the way. So I know someone else who's, company has been like, you can stay in a company, but your job is moving to Switzerland or something like that, or we'll give you 6 months salary and we'll make you redundant. So he's chosen to be, you know, to get 6 months salary and be made redundant so he can find another job in London. So I think these are the decisions that I think Brexit, we were heading towards this already, where London wasn't as like favoured. And I think because of COVID, it's only going to kind of like exacerbate those types of those trends that we saw anyway going into like the last couple of months, or going into the year, sorry. So I definitely think that there's life to be lived outside London. Like I think there's such a, and it's always perpetrated by the people who aren't from London, if I'm honest. It's always this whole like, I have to be here, like, oh my god, like I'm moving to Hackney and I'm moving to Brixton, and this is now like they wear it on their head. Like, for me, I'm from Peckham, I grew up there. I don't wear Peckham on my head in a way that means that it's the be all and end all of my existence. I feel like sometimes with people who aren't from London, and this is not me coming for anyone, but there is that, I think London, growing up, it was never that, I never felt that. It was only when I entered the professional world that people talked about London as being like some sort of mecca and they couldn't leave. So that's my kind of view on things. I feel like I have no kind of, I can imagine myself not living in London. Like,
you said that for ages.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah, I don't know about you.
Oh, I mean, I guess I'm weird because obviously I've lived in Croydon my entire life, which most people will dispute whether it's in London anyway. But in my brain, like, I've never given a shit about central London. I think you know that. Like, to me, the world that begins and ends with Croydon. Like, and I know that that sounds weird because obviously most people from Croydon are trying to get the hell out. But I think Croydon, just in terms of like, I've said this for years, like, in terms of transport links, in terms of just like, I love the fact that it's not central. I love it. I know people roast us for it, even though it's what, 11 minutes. You know, we get defensive, like, oh my god, it's only 11 minutes to Victoria on the overground anyway. But like, that's real. It really is close, but also simultaneously, like, it is literally its own country. Like, you know, I've been screaming Crexit, get us out of this country and create Croydon its own like kind of independent thing, because I truly feel like it's basically its own place. And like, I think because everything pretty much is here already from, I sound like a, what's the word, like ambassador or some like tourism person, but like, obviously there's like the shopping centres and like just things to do around here. So when I was growing up, I never used to go to central London anyway. And it was truly treated as if it was like a holiday, like, oh wow, I'm really going on an outing because we're going to central. But I mean, the fact I call it central, like I'm always talking about London in terms of like, you know, it's a real commute for me. But yeah, so I think for me, I've never really been like, oh my gosh, I have to be like, I've had no desire to ever live centrally. But I think I have quite a different experience, because I say that as someone who genuinely does live like, you know, it takes me, as we love to remind everybody, just a couple minutes on the overground to get to Victoria anyway. But I would never be like, I want to live like centrally or anything like that. But I just think in terms of like, yeah, where I live specifically is very, it's like, Croydon's obviously like a very big borough, and it has like quite a lot of different types of places in it. So you've got like where I live in like West Croydon versus like Purley. And I've always said that like I'd love to live in somewhere like Purley, which is still technically Croydon or the part of the borough, but it's like really leafy and really kind of like, I used to see cows and stuff on my way to school when I was going through there. So yeah, I feel like I've never really got the central London hype anyway, because my hype is solely preserved for like my area and that's it really. But yeah, in terms of other parts of the country, like Manchester, Birmingham, wherever, like, I guess, yeah, I just always see myself staying where I grew up. So like, I'm probably like the worst person to have this conversation with, because like, I'm so, what's the word, tunnel vision in terms of like, if I don't live, I've always planned to like buy in my, basically up my road. So yeah.
So, our slay or nay this week is a slay. I think last week we had a nay. So yeah, good to kind of get back on the positivity run. That is a slay. So our slay for this week is Jenna Kuru. And she's our slay because she is an amazing, super talented director and creative. And she directed, her and amongst other couple of directors as well, directed Black is King, the new Beyonce production. So yeah, she's from Peckham, so it's, you know, always happy to see someone from South doing really well on the world stage.
So shout out to Jenna Kuru, man, well done. So that pretty much brings us to the end of this episode. So until then, take care and see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.